Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
They're here.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again.
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welch.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Did that blow your mind?
That just happened.
In This League on Sports Grid starts now. It is Bogman. It is Welsh. It is an hour of ITL action. And what the hell? Jameis Winston is a New Orleans Saint?
Did you see that the Steelers apparently offered him a more lucrative deal, but he wanted to go learn behind Drew Brees?
I did hear that there was another team. I did not hear that it was the Pittsburgh Steelers. Very interesting. It is Bogman and Welsh talking draft, talking Winston. Obviously, we're going to start here. Just want to remind you guys, you can find us on Twitter at @IsItTheWelsh, at Bogman Sports, and check out all the podcasts. Just search In This League on any podcast aggregator. More football, new football, fantasy breakdown coming this week, as well as multiple baseball episodes, tons and tons of content. And if you guys want to upgrade your experience, come and check us out over at patreon.com/ITL Army. Or if you search In This League, it'll take you there. You can support your boys while getting tons of extra content. I actually always thought in the Jameis Winston sweepstakes, Pittsburgh, you know, you and I had talked about it a multitude of times.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh was a very, very ideal situation because, you know, we talked about you were kind of defending the Jordan Love to Green Bay situation after what you experienced as a Pittsburgh Steeler fan. So obviously you want to have a solid backup. And if there was a spot that Jameis Winston really could have had an opportunity to be around a good team, have weapons and be actually get opportunity based on injuries, Pittsburgh seemed like a very, very likely spot. But late Saturday night, we're talking like 1 a.m. or 12, or it was like midnight, at least midnight Pacific Standard Time. So 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. Eastern, Jameis Winston becomes official. I saw Charles Robinson from Yahoo reported that Winston was signing a 1-year deal with the Saints. This is after bringing back Breeze and signing Taysom Hill for $7 million. So this is
right.
I guess Winston going into the number two role and them not wanting to commit to Taysom Hill or being comfortable with Taysom Hill as that guy. It is just a wacky, wacky, unbelievable move in my eye, especially to turn down extra money to go to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, the Pittsburgh thing, I'm glad didn't happen because
really?
I tell you what. Not necessarily just because I do like Jameis Winston and I hated watching Mason Rudolph, but I don't think I can take a year of NFL memes and the jokes that they would make and the jokes that everyone else would make if Roethlisberger and Winston were on the same team.
Oh, like right? Interception jokes?
Well, no, not interception jokes. So,
There you go. It's clicking.
Light bulb's going on now.
Yeah, when he stands on the table and the other one walks in the bar.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right.
A Roethlisberger and a Winston walk into a bar, that type of stuff.
Yeah, and all the women leave.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone runs scared.
Those type of jokes, you know, while I do want a good backup quarterback for the Steelers, and, you know, obviously I could clearly get over those jokes.
I was about to say, at the expense of a joke, you would take
right.
it at the expense of a joke?
Sure, I would. Yeah, I don't care. I would much rather watch Jameis Winston than Duck Hodges. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would take NFL memes for a year, but I was actually kind of surprised that the Steelers offered him that, and I, you know, that is all also being reported. I don't know if it's true and all that stuff.
That seems likely. I mean, they did. Actually,
it does seem likely. They just don't have a lot of cap space.
It's so weird. I just opened up Twitter as you were talking, and the first one was a tweet where it says Jameis Winston was offered a more lucrative deal in Pittsburgh, but he wanted to go and not only play under Drew Brees, but wanted to learn from Sean Payton. So this was from Bucks. I mean, it was like a Bucks person or whatever, but
it keeps him closer to home too, you know, because I think he's from Florida. So that, you know, staying in the South, I think, is important for him. And Drew Brees might be done at the end of this year. And even if he does, if he's not at the end of this year, he missed multiple games last season with a hand injury.
It's just a Taysom thing, dude.
He's been old too.
My problem is, like, I understand. I guess there's a couple things here. Taysom Hill is an enigma wrapped in an enigma, because as a player, he is he's crazy, because he's a wide receiver, he's a running back, he's a tight end, he's a kick returner, he's a quarterback, but he wants to be a quarterback. He's talked about, like, that was a big thing for him. He wants to be a quarterback. So the move that the Saints did has all but assured he will not be given the opportunity outside of the role that he's continued to play. And it seems counterintuitive from that respect, that it's not good for Taysom Hill and he's going to get the hell out of Dodge as soon as he can. It also doesn't seem like there's a commitment from the New Orleans Saints that Taysom Hill has a future as that quarterback, because you go and bring in a big time quarterback in Jameis Winston, who, like, at the end of the day for him, he wasn't going to walk. There's very few spots he was going to walk into to be able to start. Like, maybe if he would have gone to New England, maybe if he would have gone to Denver, maybe if he would have competed in Chicago. There's very, very few situations that are going to pay him money. So this was a 1-year deal to get into next year's market. But that's why it's like Taysom Hill is an enigma, and then it's wrapped in now this 3-way quarterback spot. That didn't seem like the place that Jameis Winston was going to go. I would have named 20 other spots that would have probably made more sense.
Yeah, I think they really like Taysom Hill, but I think the idea of him taking over a quarterback is just not, it's not sustainable, because, who's the most injury-prone quarterback you can think of, the Welsh? I mean, just off the top of your head.
Oh, man. I feel like I just had one and then it went away. Injury-prone quarterback? Oh, God.
Yeah, like, if Taysom Hill was sitting behind Roethlisberger, Roethlisberger's missed multiple games with all kinds of weird injuries when Bruce Arians was the OC, because they threw the ball 50 times a game.
It's probably Roethlisberger on the top of starting quarterbacks right now. It's Roethlisberger. But, like, you could name a few, and then I might be like, oh, okay. But none else jump into my head.
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, there's all kinds of guys that miss a game here, miss a game there, all that stuff. The older they get, it always happens. But Taysom Hill, just going through his collegiate career, from what I remember, he always had a lower body injury. His freshman year, he played 6 games, started 13 as a sophomore. Then he was down to 5 as a junior, 1 as a senior, and they gave him the medical red shirt after his senior year to come back and play his last season, 2016, at BYU. He wound up playing 12 games there, but he's always, like, if he gets more than 10 or 15 snaps, he's going to get hurt.
Like, I mean, I guess, but, like, he's the backup. Like, they go and you spend that type of money. This isn't like, I don't know, dude. Like,
Winston will be the straight backup should he miss game, just like Teddy Bridgewater.
I mean, no, it's clear. That's why I'm saying the whole situation, it's weird. It's totally weird. I guess it makes sense. You're going to go to a big, powerful NFC team, and there could be some looming, like, if Brees were to leave this season, and and Winston knows the system 1 year in out, then he would be solid to go. It just doesn't, to me, it just doesn't take away from Taysom Hill. I think that the Saints could walk into 2021 with none of these guys, because why would Taysom Hill want to come back without a commitment? Jameis Winston is going to go theoretically take the most money, though I guess he walked away from that, and there's no guarantees of Drew Brees.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely correct. Did you see the Saints' last pick in this draft, which makes it even weirder for Taysom Hill?
No. Is it a quarterback?
Yeah.
Oh, it's that guy that wants to be Taysom
Tommy
Hill.
Tommy Stevens.
Yeah.
Tommy Stevens, who played quarterback at Penn State and at Mississippi State. After Moorhead went to Mississippi State to coach, he was EOC at Penn State when he got the head coaching job from Mississippi State. But this dude, like, he needs to convert to be a tight end or something. And they actually traded back into the 7th round to take him, so they didn't have to.
Knowing that Taysom's going to be gone. I guess what was sticking in my head, though, Boggs, is, like, that type of financial commitment to your quarterbacks is wild. Because I'm sitting here thinking, like, look at a team like it's good to have depth at quarterback. Look at a team like the Niners. The Niners have got 2 quarterbacks. where behind Jimmy Garoppolo, where if like in Nick Mullins and who's the other one?
Beathard.
Oh yeah. Beathard. I like Beathard. Beathard and Mullins. Those are two guys that have a market. Like Nick Mullins could, he would viably be a great starting quarterback in the NFL. But like, I think there are teams that would want to give that a shot. Like, I'm surprised New England hasn't.
Mason Rudolph had a market, and then the XFL folded.
Well, then he played. Yeah, then he played a game, right. And everyone's like, oh yeah. I'm surprised like New England hasn't come barking for a guy like Nick Mullins. But like, there's low investment, so that's why. Like, if I'm the Saints, I mean, I guess they got the money. You would have figured, okay, bring in Taysom Hill. Why don't you bring in a quarterback maybe in the third or fourth round that can compete? And then you've got some depth from that standpoint. What do you think? How much money do they have tied at the quarterback position right now?
I'd have to go look. I haven't seen it, but it's a ton because they gave Breeze the 2-year $50 million deal, right? And then how much did they give Winston yesterday?
I don't know. A lot?
Yeah.
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I literally have no idea how
so
much they gave.
So whatever they gave him, plus they put the first round tender on Taysom Hill. So nobody gave him an offer. So, you know, they definitely spent a lot on him as well. So it's a ton of money. You're absolutely right. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think with the window closing fairly quickly on them with Breeze, I think this at least gives Winston a chance if he wants to sit and learn behind Breeze for a year to come back and just take over for Breeze when he leaves. Or if Breeze gets hurt like he did last year, this gives them the Teddy Bridgewater level of backup quarterback that they had last year, which kept them in it.
Yeah, so. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, if you've got the money and you've got the depth and the money doesn't need to go any other spots, why not? You know, if you've got if you're not holding on to a bunch of money, it's a 1-year deal. So, you know, once it expires, you're going to have money the following season to make whatever contractual stuff you want to do. If you're not looking to extend anybody in season and you're not going to make any other splashes in free agency and you've got the cash, it's not the worst thing in the world to shore up those positions if you're going to make a big run. Unlike like the 49ers, they seem to be, you know, unloading. They unloaded like close to $8 million. And then Joe Staley retired when they made the trade for Trent Williams. And that those two essentially crossed each other out. And then they just added on like another $7 or $8 million. That's probably money they're going to do for in-season extensions instead of going out and, you know, getting like a Jameis Winston.
I might have missed it if you said, but did you see how much Taysom Hill's getting paid?
I think it's
$7 million.
$16.3 million. Oh my, no Taysom way.
Is that Winston might be getting seven or whatever, but because they put that number one tender on him, he's getting 1 year at 16.3 for Taysom Hill. And
give me Breeze's money because I'm pulling up Winston.
He's at 25. He signed a 2-year 50, so he's at 25. I mean,
it has
so
to be about 3.5 because on the report, it says no details have been released, but they're saying it's supposed to be an economical deal. And the Saints only had about $3.5 million in cap space that was actually available. But dude, you're talking $40+ million. It looks like, right? Is that about right? $40+ million.
Well, they're already at 41 with Breeze and Taysom Hill. They're at 41.3. So the only two guys getting it's Breeze, Michael Thomas, and Cameron Jordan are the only guys on the Saints getting paid more than Taysom Hill.
That's
everybody
wild.
Else on a per year basis is making significantly less than him. Their left tackle Terron Armstead is making 13. Manny Sanders, they just signed, is making 12. Andrus Peat, who they just drafted his replacement, is getting 11.5. So, everybody else is getting paid way less than Taysom Hill.
It's a big...
For however many snaps he gets a game. I mean, what is it, like 10, 15 a game? It's not a ton.
No, so, it's not. It seems that it's one of those, like, you know, if you want to have... We got a couple more minutes here. If you want to talk about the rich getting richer, you know, you have this situation where the Saints, if they've got the depth and they've got the financial flexibility, they can make, you know, some slick moves like this. And it's similar to like what the 49ers did, you know, and getting your take, Bogman. You know, a lot of people, however you feel about their draft coming out of it, positive or negative, and something we're going to be doing here in a little bit, this guy on Twitter did this really interesting thing where he created a GPA, if you will, off of all the different grades from all the big analysts, and created a GPA for the drafts for each team. And, you know, the 49ers were a mixed bag across the board, but they were able to make a couple financial moves in trading Marquise Goodwin and then Matt Breida, while and then also acquiring Trent Williams, big time offensive tackle Trent Williams, as Joe Staley retired. So, you know, people can go back and look and they could say, well, you know, they lost Buckner, Staley, and Emmanuel Sanders, and they replaced with Ayuk, Kinlaw, and Trent Williams. It was a product of the rich getting richer that both teams were able to do. What did you think about the Trent Williams trade and what that does? Does it feasibly change or do anything for you for any of the 49ers, you know, offensive players, maybe the run game as far as Mostert or McKinnon coming into this year? You know, is this a big positive for the 49ers offense over Staley?
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, obviously, that you lose Staley, but when you can bring in a guy like Trent Williams for a third next year and a fifth this year, I thought that it was a great deal. And it was kind of was out of desperation from the Redskins as well, because they knew they just had to do something. This guy is just going to refuse to play for us.
Well, he refused to trade to the Minnesota Vikings, which we've heard that came out. I think ultimately the 49ers might have given up a little bit more because they gave a third rounder next year. I think Minnesota was trying to give a fourth round this year, but
They were trying to get a first for the entire offseason. The Redskins were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were attempting the whole time.
I thought that was going to happen, but I thought that they would maybe, you know, take a second and a fifth or something like that. And they wound up going all the way down to a third and a fifth, which, you know, was a great deal for your Niners. I thought fantastic. The rich getting richer. Plus, I'm not the one that's going to grade the Niners hard. I thought they did a fantastic job in this draft. So, you know, especially with getting Williams and, you know, they may have created one of the best running back spots out of this draft, because all the running backs wound up in weird, muddied situations for the most part. So getting Breida over to Miami, of course, Jordan Howard's still there too, but I thought that was a great deal for fantasy. So the Niners did right by me for everything.
Yeah,
not you, but right by me.
Not by me. I mean, I'm walking away with it, you know, from the 30,000 foot view that things are all right. I'll never let go of the Judy stuff. Things are split on Ayuk a little bit. Things are split on Kinlaw. There was this scathing article. 49ers Web Zone is a more prominent 49ers website. And an absolutely scathing article on what a garbage draft and a garbage decision that the 49ers made by drafting Kinlaw and then trading up for Ayuk. But I'm a Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, I know. I actually almost sent it to you and I was like, did I write this? I'm, you know, looking at those guys, you can deal with it. It's just hard after the Judy thing. But then trading for Trent Williams, that's the type of stuff that this is what winners do. They make these big time moves. Man. You know, the Saints can go and add the riches of Winston, which a lot of other teams can't do. And you get big time players wanting to play for a little bit less in those situations. And then teams like, you know, the 49ers being able to trade for all pro offensive linemen like Trent Williams. I mean, Sean McVay was asked about it after the fact and he's like, yeah, it's good you reminded me. I need to go have a couple more beers after, you know, missing out on that opportunity. Now, there was one other guy that didn't get traded that I think we need to talk about. And there's a whole bunch more. There's some fun stuff. There's some draft GPA stuff, so don't go anywhere. More ITL coming up right here in Sports Grid.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
You want to punch me right now, but you won't.
Why don't you punch me in the face?
Punch me in the face!
Hey, Derek, you know what's always good for shoulder pain?
What?
If you lick my...
In This League.
All right, welcome back. It's In This League. We're back right here on Sports Grid. You guys can find us over at InThisLeague.com. Check us out. Get the list. Get the secret shows. Get the whatever. Come and support your boys. Independent podcasting at its finest during a completely different time. I'll tell you what. ESPN must just absolutely be loving what's going on around the country right now. I'm actually being joined here. This is Scott Bogman. Scott Bogman, he's a really, really, really interesting prospect, and we're excited to see where he goes. But I do want to tell you that he's lost his grandmother, his uncle, his dad died early when he was a kid. He was left out on his own. He struggled with a lot of things over his life, adversity. But hey, Bogman, yeah. It's your big day. Let's talk about your big day. What was up with ESPN?
I don't understand. I understand that this year we had more time to kind of dig into the background stories of these guys because
dig six feet under.
All of these NFL Network people and ESPN people don't have live sports to cover. So, all right, let's just go deep dive on these prospects and get some interesting stories. So every time they brought up a player, here's a list of people who died early in their family and how it affected them. But, also it's a great day for them. Let's also not forget that this is a great opportunity for this young man.
I was thinking like, man, I would have been a great prospect. It'd be like, hey, Chris Welsh is going to be a great prospect. Did we mention that his dad died 2 months before he was born? He never met him, grew up in a single household with his mother, struggled with lots of stuff, bullied as a kid. But hey, it's a big day. Smile, Welsh. Why aren't you smiling? Why are you not smiling? Like, yeah, the memes that people were putting out made it a little bit better where they were like, you know, every time an ESPN producer sees that a guy grew up in a happy household, it was like an angry person meme, like, God damn it.
Yeah. Like I saw like a two parent household. Then they flipped the table over.
Yeah,
damn
exactly.
It. You know,
exactly.
This is the worst.
But ESPN
this
is terrible. Trash,
this guy
though.
Doesn't
but,
have any tragedy.
But ESPN is trash.
Yeah, sure.
They've always been trash.
They always have, but it was just unbelievable. It was every single person. And I like it happened so often. I noticed it as I'm doing my live stream, right? I'm doing my live stream. I'm talking about the guys as they get drafted. I'm on the phone with you. I'm on the phone with Bubba. I had Pisa Pia for a long time on Saturday. So, you know, I'm kind of distracted, pulling myself in six different directions during this thing. And I still noticed it. It was like this guy gets drafted. Here are all of his dead relatives. Like it was almost like a bullet point. Like, yeah. Not here's their pros and cons.
Great 40 time. Great 40 time. Hands of glue. Three sisters died in a car accident. You're just like, Jesus Christ.
All the memories from their life where they cried. Here they are in a list. All of them.
I'm surprised they didn't do, you know, those horrible animations they were doing the whole time. I'm surprised they weren't just like, hey, let's reenact the car crash that ended this guy's parents real quick. Right after we show this cool cartoon character of the guy throwing the ball. It's like, Jesus. ESPN.
I mean, you're not far off, dude. For real.
I know.
It was ugly. That stuff. And I thought it was kind of like, okay, maybe I'm just being morbid. You know, these guys want to include the hardships of their life and what, you know, made these guys. NFL players, what made them grind the way they did and all that stuff. But I saw articles like The Athletic put one out. I think there might have been one on not NFL.com, but I can't remember. There was another prominent site where people were pissed. People
sure.
were pissed that ESPN did this in because they were in charge of the coverage. You know, they had NFL Network people on there, but all the picks were. You know, they would go to the ESPN studios and all that stuff.
But
and
ESPN,
Trey Wingo.
Sometimes ESPN, dude, is like just more organized TMZ. That's all that they are half the time. Like they'll pick the most salacious things and they'll be like, all right, let's make a package around it. Where, you know, TMZ will just come out with a tweet. They'll be like, sources say this, here's a picture. Here's a, you know, let's look at the pictures of the Kobe accident. And it's like, TMZ, get it together, dude. And ESPN is just, you know, a little bit more organized version of that. I don't take them seriously. So I heard about that stuff and I don't get up in arms because, like, you know, people are so bored right now. People just need to get up in arms. I mean, they don't need to, but that's just what people do more than ever now. I just look at that stuff and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what ESPN does. Of course they're doing this. Of course they're adding this to the stat line of a player is how, you know, how many years were their parents incarcerated? How many drug issues did they go through and how many people died in their lives? And it's just like, all right, that's not a... It's not a badge of honor. You know, you think somebody thought they were doing, and you know what we always do, Boggs, you and I always do this. And it's so true. And this kills me is, you know, there were a bunch of guys sitting around a room and one guy's like, I got an idea. Let's put up all the hardships and we're going to push it out and people will feel sympathetic to the player. And someone else was like, you know what? Greg's got a great idea. Let's get that up. Come on, folks, let's get together, get on to police reports. And like they rallied around thinking this was a good idea. There had to be a point where someone in that booth was just like, hey, guys, have we put like dead relative on three of the last four prospects? Do you think maybe we should spin this around in a different direction?
I mean, how about have, like a 1 minute to 30 second interview in the can with these guys? And if they want to mention how their dead relative inspired them, the hardships that they've been through, whatever it is, if they want to mention them, let them mention them. Don't be like, yes, yep, great athlete out of Auburn, had to come here because he's from an African country that's war-torn, and both of his parents are dead, but he was adopted by nice people over here. Now he's playing football. Like, let him introduce his weird story. You know, or not weird story, but his tragic story.
Or just like let it be something that's maybe a real part of the lexicon. Like if somebody
save it for the 30 for 30, for God's sake.
Or like, I mean, just be really, really, really careful about who you choose and be like super specific and super conservative about the decisions you're going to do that. Maybe talk to the players and be, you know, find out like, yeah, sure. Like I think it was the one prospect where I even saw him responding to it where someone tweeted at ESPN. They're like, you guys are garbage because it showed like, you know, their mom had, you know, I don't know, 16 years of drug problems. Yeah. And then he quote tweeted. He's like, nah, it's all cool. He's like, you know, she worked hard and she changed for us. And it's like, yeah, but he shouldn't be out there doing that. Like if the guy wants that and he goes out and he talks to people about it, it's another thing. Then ESPN just sensationalizing it and just making it a whole... I mean, I'm surprised that's not the first question out of their mouth. They're like, hey, how's your drugged up mom? And just like, oh my God. Thanks, ESPN.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Susie. It was strange, but this was a strange draft. I mean, Roger Goodell had to go to his weird chair halfway through. And it's funny because like 15 minutes before, did you see him switch from standing to the chair, by the way?
I mean,
were you paying attention when that happened?
No, I mean, I just saw like there were lots of different versions. Like he was wearing a T-shirt and then I tuned out after the 14th
many wardrobe changes, which was strange to me.
Yeah.
But I think between the second and third round on day two, he said, all right, I'm going to switch over to my chair now. Cause I kind of started thinking like, man, he's kind of old. You know, is he going to be standing for the entire draft the whole time? But no, he switched to his chair to announce some of the picks. And it had definite like reading you a Christmas story from your creepy uncle vibes. That's how I would describe Roger Goodell sitting. And then they said like they're going to do a raffle to, raise money for COVID-19 stuff. And he said, yeah, I'm going to have one weekend of this NFL season where someone gets to come down to my man cave basement and watch the games with me and sit in the chair. You know, you get to sit in the comfy chair and I'll sit on the couch. What's that?
Oh, you don't know the bigger story behind that because that is true. But are you familiar with the relationship that Roger Goodell and one Mr. Dave Portnoy from Barstool have?
Yeah, that is not good.
Well,
right.
Because first off, they locked themselves, you know, they did the protest on the Deflategate And then Portnoy, this is the more famous one.
He got booted out of the Super Bowl.
Well, because he made the clown. The clown shirt is Portnoy's. He purchased that that logo and he sells it. And then obviously the NFL over the last couple of years has really, really like smacked down on Barstool. They don't allow him to get credentials. They have to sneak in. The NFL comes down on it. Well, who do you guess is the number one bidder on that auction right now?
Portnoy.
100%. Dave Portnoy tweeted, he's like, why can I only go in increments of $10? He's like, I'm ready to go in increments of $50,000. He's up. He's number one right now at $50,000. And he just said, I'll see you 30 minutes before this ends next week. And he's like, I will spend whatever I have to spend to win that. Portnoy is going to spend every dollar to get that meeting with Goodell. There is no way in hell the NFL is going to take it. And they're going to look bad again. They're going to look horrible again because there's no way they're going to take that money, or they might take the money and then not live up to it. And not
honestly, I think that Roger Goodell, he should take the money and let Portnoy come and bury the hatchet. I think that would make him look good. Like, he's got a great opportunity right now to vault ahead of some of the other commissioners because, I mean, I don't think he's going to get past Adam Silver regardless of what he does. But maybe if basketball doesn't come back and football does figure out a way to get it back and get the season rolling first before anybody else, I think that's going to look really good. And Rob Manfred could not look worse right now.
I couldn't agree.
I think that I already put Goodell ahead of Manfred, to be honest with you.
I don't know if I do that, but I couldn't agree more. What the play is here for Goodell is you let the winning bid come in, you set it up, and because Portnoy is going to want to record it. And what Goodell needs to do is he needs to wear the clown Goodell shirt. Because then what you do is you shut down all the stuff. Because Portnoy is not going to relent. Portnoy is going to go at him regardless. He's not going to back down and be all buddy-buddy. That's just what he does. But Goodell needs to wear the shirt, go in, and just kind of kill the beef. But that's why they're doing it. That's why, because it's going to be massive, massive ratings for Barstool.
I think it'd be great on both sides if they did it.
I do too. So, I mean, the NFL would if they wanted to proceed forward in a really positive way in marketing to the younger audience, they should. I mean, I don't know if you saw, man, the there was like a Budweiser, I don't know what the hell it was, party or something like that, online party that Lil Wayne did a concert at. And you know who it was hosted by? It was Gronk and his girlfriend Camila and Big Cat from Barstool. I mean, they are entrenched. They are entrenched in the NFL. Nothing is bigger than, pardon my take. So the best thing he could do to flip this on its freaking back is just to go all in. Just go all in. If they're going to sit there and he's going to have that ridiculous dumb screen behind him of booing and accept that, just go all in, mend the fences, make it all good. It's gonna help, because then you take away their power. That's the whole you and I thing. You know, you be self-deprecating, because then you take the power away from other people.
Yeah, I think you're right that they're not going to let this happen. Like, the more I think about it, the more there's just no way.
No, it'll just not accept. The bid won't go through or something like that.
It's either that, or they'll like take down the bidding thing and turn it into a raffle, you know, because that's what I thought it was at first. I didn't know it was a bidding bid. I thought it was a raffle bid where you buy the tickets and then, you know, they announce the winner, and then that way they can kind of go, yeah, and there's no way we're going to have Portnoy win. Even if he wins, we'll pull a different name or whatever. So I think that might be it. Or they'll do a thing where it's like, nah, we're not going to accept your money because we don't like you.
Well, they'll just do like a last minute thing. They'll have, you know, I mean, if the NFL really wanted to kill it, they'll just have a last minute donor go in and, you know, lock him out. Either way, it's going to be fascinating with the whole process. But it was, I mean, they had to know what was coming. I don't know. The Goodell draft stuff, I just don't like these guys. It was fine. But what I don't like is, like, he's not a human. Like, don't treat it like he's a human. He makes $50 million a year to take the brunt of every slap across the board. And then, like, they perfectly queued up each day. Hey, look, he's more casual. Then he's wearing like a t-shirt at the end. And it's like, nah, you guys don't need to do that. Like, you don't need to try, like, don't try to humanize Roger Goodell, because that's not going to work. Like, you're going to humanize him with Portnoy more, making fun of himself, than you are on the NFL draft. He is a suit. Exactly.
Right. He's a suit. So him, I got to be honest, it was weird seeing him in a t-shirt. Like, it wasn't one that fit him very well. So I don't think he usually wears t-shirts.
Quarantine's
I think
not being nice to everybody, Bogman. You got to be careful about that. Everyone's shirts are fitting a little bit tighter.
Hey, look, man, it's not even about tight fit or anything. It just, I think it's from seeing someone that you see specifically in suits all the time to seeing him in a t-shirt, it just didn't work. It was like, you said, it was like he was a non-human person. It was like, is this a robot?
Yeah.
What is happening here? It's like when the robots are pretty close to being human, but they're not quite there. Like, however your brain processes that, they say that's when people are the most disgusted by a robot, is when they're almost human, but you can still tell they're a robot. That's when people
except
get
in Westworld.
The most disgusted. Yeah, well, yeah, in Westworld, you get
they got things, over that. Yeah, they got over that quick.
They sure did. They got over it pretty quick, yeah, right.
They didn't get so sick. They had a different feeling.
Right, in their loins. But yeah, so it felt weird and it felt ham-fisted and stuff. But I didn't mind, you know, we didn't see any of the technical glitches or major technical glitches. I mean, nope. There were things here and there, but I thought the NFL did a pretty good job, and I think Goodell is kind of moving up in people's minds with the boo the commish and all that stuff. He is a total goofball, and he'll never not be a suit in my mind. But it humanized him a little bit more.
I think a lot of people are humanizing this as well. There's, you know, there's a lot of stories going around and something to watch into the future. It's not just football. It's societal. Is a lot of GMs and people in this process were kind of were asked about the technological aspect. And a lot of people were reevaluating what the amount of time they put into everything, realizing what all can be done and can be done successfully virtually from their homes, whether it's the draft, whether it is the scouting process. You know, I think you're going to have, you know, the old image of a coach, you know, working 20 hours a day and being away from their family and stuff. I think a lot of people are reevaluating, and that's a bigger societal thing that kind of happened in this process as well. And you'll probably see reverberations of a virtual draft and some of the success they did into the near future. But we got to go to break. When we come back, I want to quickly talk about the one guy that I thought would get traded that didn't. And I want to talk on this GPA grade that was given out to all the teams. It's an aggregate of all of the scores from the NFL draft. So don't go anywhere. Bogman the Welsh, we're right back.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. After that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more?
Let me tell you something about
In This League.
Final segment right here on Sports Grid. It is In This League. Find us on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh, at Bogman Sports. And of course, come and check us out over at InThisLeague.com. That'll take you to our Patreon. Come and sign up. Get all the perks. Bogman, even on Sunday, just released a brand new, updated Dynasty Ranks list. We're going to be talking about the new first-year player guys, all the guys that were just drafted, and how they rank in this league Fantasy Football Podcast. But you can get updated Dynasty Ranks on Patreon via Bogman right now. Very solid stuff, dude.
Yeah, thanks, man. And, I may not be good on the ranks leading up to the draft, but once they have all the stuff, context, team put together, I got them out pretty damn quick.
Well, it's not that you're not good. It's you just refuse. You have context, man. Yeah, you have a contextual. Yeah, your contextual thing is like your crutch, or if it's a crutch, it might not be a crutch,
sure,
but it's like you can't wrap your head around pre-value until the destinations. But yeah, like you said, you already pounded that thing out on Sunday.
Yeah, the first year player drafts, which a lot of people started on Sunday. I mean, usually those are slow drafts, but people are starting their first year player drafts for their NFL dynasty leagues already. So if you want ranks, I've got overall, I've got by position and all that good stuff. I even have listed the UDFAs and what teams they've signed with, their stats on the sheet.
Do you have a separate tab also for just the first year player guys?
Yeah, well, no. I haven't done the full dynasty yet. I've only done the first year player, but the full dynasty will be coming on Friday.
Okay. So this isn't the dynasty ranks. This is the first year player dynasty ranks.
Yes, from this draft, gotcha. All guys ranked for all your first year dynasty drafts.
And then Friday, they're going to be inserted dynasty, in.
Yeah, full on Friday, and then 2020 rankings the following Friday.
Very cool. So early stuff.
Yeah, it was not nearly as much of a grind. I think once you know these guys and you get familiar with them, plus you have the context of where they're going, I got those guys all in there. I did switch back. I came to my senses, the Welsh, and put the two wideouts that I had ahead of everybody as one and two on my list. So
you went back to
the running backs down a little bit. I did. Yeah. Well, I just, I let it sit for a little bit more, and I thought about playing time and the length of career and all that stuff. And I just think that there's, Judy and Lamb, even though I don't like Locke and I'm not the biggest fan of Lamb going to Dallas with all of the weapons that they have, they're still going to last long and they're the most talented.
Wow. So, okay. Cause that is not a consensus. I think most people at this point, though I sometimes can't tell how people talk because a lot of analysts I'll see or some specific analysts I see talk out of both ends of their mouth where people talk in respect to when they'll talk about ranking them, they'll say this year, but then they'll say dynasty, but they're really not. Because what I'm getting at is Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, those are one and two essentially on everybody's 2020 rookie ranks. And people talk in rookie ranks, but people sometimes they convolute the dynasty aspect of it. And I don't know. I think they talk like they are, but then they're really not because the wide receivers do have the longevity. So I don't think there's a real consensus that everyone's going to be out to sparse out there because, is it the running backs? Is it the wideouts? But you're saying you've kind of come to your consensus. And at least the little preview here is you have the two wideouts at the top of your first year player stuff for dynasty.
Yeah. Judy and Lamb are 1-2 on my list. You got to think of the length of the career when you're looking at dynasty and running backs. They may get in there earlier, but they don't last nearly as long. So go ahead.
OK, well, I want to talk about the GPA thing, but I was a little surprised, maybe a little bit more shocked that we didn't see a move of Leonard Fournette. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because I do want to get a little bit of this, the GPA thing. But do you still think a trade is potentially on the horizon? He wanted Cam Newton to come in. That still could be a viable option. I don't know where you would grade out Jacksonville's draft and as far as the moves that they ended up making, both offensively and defensively. I'm looking here just a quick, I'm going to look at the draft sheet here. They were actually given, we're going to do the GPAs here, a 3.44 GPA. Many A's were given across the board on what the Jags did. Do you think they're going to move on, or they can't even move on from Fournette right now? Or do you think he's going to be locked into the team for 2020?
I think he's going to be on the team for 2020. I think if you were going to trade him, you probably should have done it. I'm not saying that a trade couldn't happen later. We see, a back go down in the preseason and someone offer the Jaguars something good. then yes, I could see him easily getting traded. But they didn't add a running back in this draft. I think they're just going to go full steam ahead with Leonard Fournette. And we even heard, you know, like Doug Marrone was talking about how he wanted Minshew and Fournette to hash this out. So they talked. I'm assuming they talked anyway. And it seems like before the draft happened, and they're probably good to go. You know, he was the biggest. They weren't great on offense, but he was most of it last year. So it would be hard to pull him out of there and expect them to do anything, which I don't expect to win games, but you know, to do, they got to move the ball at some point. And it'd be really tough running for them to do it without Fournette this year.
Fournette feasibly is, you know, there's a lot of conversation about, you know, who are the biggest winners of the draft, and it doesn't have to just be the draft picks, but Fournette's one of those guys that I think a lot of people look at that say, well, if he's going to go back to Jacksonville, we already know what that value is. So that's actually kind of a positive, because in theory, he could have been moved to a destination that could have been squirrely. You know, he could have gone into a messy by committee with the Rams, or he could have been a, you know, a 1-2 punch in San Diego in Los Angeles with Eckler. If they, you know, just speculating here, the Tampa Bay stuff. So, you know, he was kind of a winner here. It'll be interesting to see if there is anything that comes of it. But you have to imagine with him staying, if there's a hash out, that also has to eliminate the Cam Newton to Jacksonville rumors, which still leaves out where in God's name is he going to go? You know, the one thing you could say, the, I don't know if you saw the Patriots, the Patriots article that was out there about Belichick that said that the, them not drafting a quarterback was not by design. So that could be one of those, could in theory be one of those things where the Patriots relent. You know, they went through the draft process. They didn't mean to do it. It just didn't work out in their favor. That this is where they could make that turn, because Winston is now off the market. I do think the Patriots are a tiny bit more of an option potentially for Cam Newton, but the, you know, the options are amazingly limited for him.
It's a tough decision. It's a tough decision to go out and sign Cam Newton now, specifically because we're not going to get mini camps, right? So we're, these coaches aren't going to be able to see their quarterbacks ahead of time until training camp opens, if it even opens on time. And then they get to take a longer look at the, those quarterbacks. But by then, anybody could have signed Cam Newton, you know, and he could have decided to take a 1-year deal. He could decide a million different things.
You know, Cam could be your Steelers might move their money over to Cam to back up Roethlisberger at this point.
I think Cam is a harder sell at his age and being a former MVP and stuff to get him to sit behind someone.
I agree.
So I think that the Patriots and like the Raiders and Broncos and Jaguars are probably about the options for Cam. I think it's very, very limited for him to come in and play this year. But I mean, those are a couple spots where he could go. Maybe he wants to take a 1-year deal, even in like Miami, if they don't like Fitzpatrick, or Fitzpatrick decides to retire, or whatever.
Well,
crazy
Miami's
stuff
got what, Rosen, Pat, Fitzpatrick, and Tua, though.
Yeah, they do. They do. But, you know, they don't want to play Tua this year, and Rosen sucks. So,
yeah, well,
if something happens with Fitzpatrick, I could see him going there. Just like, he just needs a place where he's going to play. I don't think he's going to go anywhere and be a backup. That's all.
Well, and especially, camp. You know, how much is, you know, I don't know if you could call it dead, but the excitement of Drew Lock and Drew Lock's, you know, constant, you know, tweets about all the weapons they kept bringing in. I still look at that situation and I go, boy, that is a team you absolutely go and bring Cam Newton in now, because Cam makes those wide receivers better. He's going to make those young wide receivers better. You've got a power offense, right? Cam would make every one of those player of those offensive position players better, where inversely those players make Drew Lock better. So it's a decision. Right. Which one do the Broncos want to do? Do they want a quarterback that can make the offense better, or do they want the offense they've built to theoretically and hopefully make the quarterback better? So that's
Elway
something we can be speculating on.
Yeah, Elway's just trying to win a QB pick from the draft. That's what he's doing with Drew Lock. He took him in the second round last year. He's giving him no excuses to fail. So if he does fail this year, then Elway can go back to the drawing board again. But I think that they're going to give Lock this full run.
Yeah, so that's what it looks like. So over on Twitter, I saw this over the weekend. I thought this was pretty cool. You guys, you go out to any, you know, football website that you like to frequent, and you're going to see draft grades, which I do agree with Pro Football Focus in their tweet where they said, reminder, draft grades are stupid. And I completely agree. Draft grades are stupid. It's a dumb exercise where it's almost like, to me, it's almost just
ripe for freezing cold takes.
I think it's just like ripe for that. I think it's just like pass or fail at this point. It's like, yeah, you don't need to get down to like, does it really matter if a team had a B+ draft or anything like that? It's kind of childish in the entire exercise. But guess what? It's part of the exercise. It's like mock drafts. It's like top 300 lists. It's all that type of stuff. It's part of the exercise, yeah, and people expect it. And this guy, I want to give him credit, or her, Renee Bugner at RNBWCV. I just happened to scroll by this, and I thought this was a fun exercise that they put together. And this person took all, and I'm not looking at the Twitter handle, so I don't know if it's a guy or girl. I don't remember. Renee is kind of an ambiguous name.
The single E is a dude name.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, there's a little apostrophe over it, too, so that might be it. Yeah, a little, yeah, exactly. But Renee took all of the big prominent guys. So I'm looking here. You see Chad Reuter. You see the PFF staff. You see Mel Kiper. You see Thor from Roto. You just go down the list. And you see all of these. I think there's 12 grades. And they created a GPA, which I thought was pretty cool. Just taking every single one of the grades and, you know, associating the numbers with it. And created the NFL Draft GPA from 2020. So the 2020 NFL Draft GPA with this aggregate here. And the top actually might be a little surprising to me, Bogman. Every single person gave this team at least an A grade, from A minus to A to A plus. Only one person from the Washington Post, Mark Maskey, gave them a B plus. They were the number one graded team across the board with a 3.92 GPA. The Minnesota Vikings, Boggs, do you think they had the absolute best draft?
I thought they had a very, very good draft, but it's hard for them to screw up because they had 11,000 picks in this draft. They kept trading back. They kept acquiring picks. I think they had 13 picks going into day three on just day three. So they wound up, I think, with 16 picks, 14 picks, something like that.
I don't even remember who they took. Who the hell did Minnesota take?
Well, Justin Jefferson.
Justin Jefferson. Okay, I remember that.
In the first round. And then Jeff Gladney was a position of need, the cornerback out of TCU.
All right.
Ezra Cleveland, a tackle that was speculated to go in the first round, fell back to them. And then they just took a lot of guys that had high ranks and fell. And that's it. I mean, when you have the ability to do that, like the Vikings do, because they already have a good roster and you have so many picks, it puts you in a great spot. So it would be hard for them to get a low grade with as many picks as they had.
The other four teams that were kind of, they tiered it out in, you know, the grading system of like the high end. These are the class valedictorians, if you will. You have the Dallas Cowboys with a 3.83 GPA. They had, what was interesting about them is they had, I think, the most A pluses of anybody, but then it was like split. Like, what was it? Dan Kadar from SB Nation gave them a B minus, where, and actually, Mel Kiper,
all from Cowboys fans. They got to be from Cowboys
fans.
Well,
but Mel Kiper also gave a B plus. Maybe you're right. But then Pro Football Focus gave them an A plus, where the Cowboys took CeeDee Lamb. And then just the others real quick, the Baltimore Ravens had a 3.79 GPA, where they had, I think, less Bs than, or maybe the same amount of Bs. No, yeah, they had less Bs than the Dallas Cowboys. They had a 3.79. The Arizona Cardinals had a 3.75 GPA, and the Bengals a 3.72. So those were the valedictorians of the NFL draft.
Yeah, and teams all had great drafts. So I think the Ravens had the best draft, also because they always do. They always take the players that I want the Steelers to take. They took J.K. Dobbins. They took my Texas guy, Devin Duvernay. I was just very upset. I thought the Ravens did a fantastic job. But I think the biggest story is the team that failed. And if you're giving out pass-fail grades, my only F probably would have been to Green Bay. And the Packers fans were all pissed.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. In the deepest class for wide receivers, maybe in NFL history, they didn't take one.
No.
And they didn't address that. They got a backup quarterback to breathe down Aaron Rodgers' neck and then didn't offer him many opportunities, even in the UDFAs. They signed one wideout. It was Darryl Stewart, the probably second-best wide receiver on Michigan State behind Cody White before he got hurt. But, I mean, they added A.J. Dillon. They added Josiah DeGuara from Cincinnati, who are good weapons. no one really for Rodgers to throw to on a consistent basis.
No. And they only had one. The highest grade they had was a B minus. Everything else was C or under. They got an F from Thor, some C's, tons of D's. The other two lowest ones, the Houston Texans were second lowest with a 2.07 GPA. By the way, the Packers had a 1.31. The Seahawks, and then I think more prominently of focus here is the Raiders, because the Raiders had, you know, two first round picks, high ones. They were given a 2.32 because they went completely off book, and people really hated their picks across the board. Another interesting addition to this this little sheet that they made is they created the GPA handed out per writer. So you can kind of go and see, is there someone that's critical? Like,
who's the hard grader?
Thor Nystrom was the absolute most difficult teacher. He's the ball buster with a 2.48 GPA. That was his average. Where Chad Reuter from NFL.com was the nice teacher at a 3.59. I thought this was an awesome exercise.
Chad Reuter's art teacher.
He's the art teacher. That's 100% true. I suggest you go check it out. It's cool stuff. RNBWCV. That is the Twitter handle. Go check out the GPA, because we are out of here. We've got a full fantasy breakdown over on the In This League Fantasy Football podcast coming up this week. So make sure you guys check it out. Plus everything else. That is Bogman. I am Welsh. You guys have a fantastic one. We'll see you guys again tomorrow. Peace.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.